calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Back with Tuesday Timeline. It is a special episode this week because the PNC Progression Wrestling Podcast explodes. That's right. Ben has decided to step up and challenge me for my WWF Heavyweight Championship, which I currently hold as the host of this podcast. So Ben's decided he's going to challenge me since I attacked him on the main event. So yeah. Ben, first of all, how are you?
I'm doing quite fantastic. We've had a good day. Once we get into that segment of the show and we start talking about WrestleMania 5, which is our main topic of conversation today. I should say tonight, because it's evening now, it's about 7:20 in the evening. We have a lot to go over from that perspective. And actually, I want to play a game when we get to that. And the game is going to be called Necessary or Not. Because we're going to go match by match and say, was this necessary to be on WrestleMania 5? Because so much of this was absolute filler, to say the very least.
I was going to tell you something before we went on the air, but I could tell you right now, since it has to do with... But I was just thinking... it's not really too late. We're still in the early years. Did you want to write down 1 to 39 and rank WrestleMania from the best to the worst?
Yes.
Okay, I do. So I can do that on here. We can start with WrestleMania 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then we'll just rank them.
Absolutely,
and then at the end of WrestleMania 5, we'll rank that one as well.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a very good idea. But before we get into the fun stuff, we do have a little bit of news to cover, because I was talking to Elio off the air right before we hit record. And, I don't know about you guys, ladies and gentlemen, but it seems that January has been a very hectic news month. Because, this is our 8th show of the month, and then if you count the ones we've done for Wrestling POV, it's actually number 12. So between all those shows, somehow on our days off, the wrestling world finds a way to explode.
Sorry, that Wrestling POV is somewhat like our show, because we're in episode 400, but plus the aftermath, it's, I think that we've done even more than 400 there.
Yeah. And, I'm really excited with the direction of both shows. I think it's going crazy. And I've been on, I want to say I've been on over 50 of the POV so far. So my podcasting experience is building up to pretty close to 400 episodes in total. But unfortunately with this one, we have to start out on a bit of a sour note. Because CM Punk injured himself toward the end of the Royal Rumble with Cody Rhodes.
Didn't he just make his return? Come on.
Yes, well, you know what, and honestly, it's getting to the point where I'm concerned for his long-term well-being, because this is he had two injuries when he was still with AEW, and then this is the third one within a 2-year time frame. So it's not trending in the right direction for Mr. Phil Brooks. But please don't misunderstand, we're not making a joke out of it. CM Punk did announce that he has a torn tricep, tore his right tricep to be precise. And that as a result, he will not be able to appear at WrestleMania. Which not only does that suck for CM Punk, because in the promo you could clearly tell how much it meant to him and how much this whole return to WWE has meant to him. He also mentioned the fact that his friend is suffering from cancer. So in comparison to what Punk is going through, that is obviously the much bigger story, and whoever that friend happens to be, we certainly wish them the best. But Punk is not having a very auspicious start to 2024. So even though this is the fun show of the week, we did feel it necessary to cover that massive piece of news, as it will bleed into our coverage of WrestleMania season moving forward. Obviously, as we get closer to WrestleMania, we'll start booking the show the way that we think it should be done. And obviously, it'll look a little bit different with CM Punk off the card, but you definitely wanna stay tuned for all of our Road to WrestleMania shows, because this is where the main podcast, PNC Progression Wrestling podcast, gets very interesting. So certainly we wish Punk the very best. And my understanding is that this is a 4 to 6 month injury, so hopefully he'll be good to go by the summer at the very latest. Well, I should say at the very earliest. But August, September, hopefully he'll be good to go. Now moving into our main topic of the evening, WrestleMania 5.
Hold on there for a minute, because before we do that, I have to do my weekly ritual. I have to go to the movies.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
And Ben, this week, I was telling you last week that there was no movie this week because it was Rain Man. However, after looking up some information, Rain Man came out in 1988 and it was number one at the box office for 6 weekends straight. So it only lost out one time, and that was in February of 89. So I went to see another one called Three Fugitives. And this one
There you go.
stars.
I've
Go
never
ahead.
heard of that. I've
All right,
never heard of that movie.
so this one stars Nick Nolte, Martin Short. And here we go with Three Fugitives.
After 5 years in jail and 14 bank robberies, Daniel Lucas is going straight to the bank. But this time, not to rob it.
I'd like to open the milk count, please.
Enter Ned Perry.
Hands up! This is a holdup! You see this? It's a grenade!
and I'm pulling the pin, so nobody business.
A guy who's decided to give crime a try and is about to make his worst mistake.
You coming with me?
Pick someone else.
You what?
I don't want anything. I'm the hostage.
It was bad enough to be taken hostage.
Excuse me, I'm gonna please. Hold your gun like a man for peace.
Now the police say the hostage is the criminal.
He took me hostage.
I took him hostage.
He says he took Lucas hostage.
And the criminal's the hostage.
I want to make it in my car, and don't try to stop me.
Shut up. You're telling my dinner, so I'm going to blow your head off.
As if they didn't have enough to worry about.
I just want to introduce you to my daughter.
No kids, especially yours.
There's just one more small problem. A little girl who'd like to keep them all together.
You're looking for two men and a little girl.
You don't really expect me to dress up like a woman, do you?
Nick Nolte.
When you're on the lam, you don't want to be noticed, so you keep your head down, your eyes on the ground.
Martin Short.
Walk. Don't look anyone in the eye on the street.
Got it.
Hey, you all right?
Yes.
You better watch where you're going, buddy.
Yeah.
Their only hope,
not feeling up to it, I'd be happy,
is to look out for each other. Three fugitives.
I'm really sorry. What's with the wig?
Huh? All right, so that was Three Fugitives. Martin Short and Nick Nolte. For me, this was an okay movie. I wouldn't say it was one of my favorites, but it was all right for its time.
Oh, very
of course,
good.
The little girl was the third fugitive, because now there's, because first there were two fugitives, but the little girl is the third one that was trying to keep them all together, and so they wouldn't get separated from each other.
Oh, okay. I was like, why is the little girl considered a fugitive? That might not apply today, but okay.
Well, that's why, because she plays Martin Short's daughter in the movie, so it makes sense that she's like the third one, and they're trying to keep her safe, and she's trying to keep all three of them safe.
Well, that does fit. I was a little confused at first.
But now it's time to get into WrestleMania 5.
Yes, and I have to tell you, I do. So I watch these things on the night before we do the show, that just so it's fresh on the mind, right? And my God, this show was just shy of 4 hours on the network, and my God, it felt longer than that. Now, granted, I did go back and rewatch several aspects of the matches and segments and what such, and I did suffer through Piper's Pit with
Brother Love. Brother Love.
Well, Brother Love, but who's the
fucking Morton Downey Jr.?
Yes.
I hated that guy. That guy was stupid.
So that was exquisitely painful. I think I'd rather watch a Dino Bravo weightlifting segment than watch that again. Besides, now luckily Rowdy Roddy Piper did make his appearance, but oh my God, I was about to have an aneurysm if Brother Love went on too much longer. Good grief.
All right, so let's get into WrestleMania 5.
So the first match was...
Hold on. So of course, local time is 4 p.m. I love these 4 p.m. start times.
Yeah, so do I.
And, of course, we're in Atlantic City, New Jersey. However, Ben, we should do this first. Before, or do you want to wait till after and rate all the WrestleManias at once?
Let's wait till after, and then we can rank them all at once.
All right, very good. All right, so 4 p.m. local time. We are in Atlantic City, New Jersey, at the Boardwalk. Ben, what do you got? The first match.
So the first match of the evening was Hercules versus King Haku.
Yes.
And you know what, folks? This is blasphemous for me to say,
Uh-oh.
because I never thought that this would be a thing that would come out of my mouth. But King Haku did not need to be in this match at all. This was the worst match involving King Haku. Now, granted, that's largely because of Hercules and
Actually, I don't even remember why this or why or how this match came together. I guess it was like one of his first feuds after he turned face. So when Bobby Heenan sold his contract as to DiBiase as his DiBiase's slave.
Yes, well, and oh my God, that slave gimmick wouldn't work too well today, huh? Jesus, it makes me even it makes me uncomfortable watching it even back then.
Ted DiBiase would probably get canceled by people today.
Without question.
Ow.
And on top of all the stuff that he's pulled in Missouri with the fraud and stuff like that.
It's
So,
all a storyline, people. Don't be so, why so serious? As my good friend Heath Ledger once said. Go
yeah.
ahead.
Well, any excuse I have to listen to you mimic the Joker. But so Hercules versus King Haku, let's talk about this for a minute. Because I really can't find anything o overly positive to say about it. Like I said, I didn't think it was possible for me not to enjoy a Haku match. The King Haku thing, we explained where that came from, coming out of our last Tuesday Timeline episode. And I wish they had just dropped it right after the thing with Harley Race was over, because seeing him come out on the throne and all that stuff when this match has nothing to do with King of the Ring or defending the crown is just stupid.
Well, remember if it was kind of stupid to have him lose it to Hacksaw Jim Duggan, because the King Duggan gimmick was kind of stupid as well.
Well, yes, and perhaps they should have just not done this at all. That's what I would prefer. And to be honest with you, this match in and of itself was extremely generic. I've never seen somebody botch a crossbody so bad as Hercules did.
That one spot was so boring, where Haku had him in that bear hug, and like Hercules is trying to break it. And it's like you're like I was sitting there, it seemed like forever just watching this guy try and break that bear
Right, so I'm glad you
hug.
brought that up because in total, this match was 6 minutes and 51 seconds. And I'm not sure how long they were in the bear hug, but it felt like at least a third or maybe even a half of the match they were in the bear hug.
Felt like forever. I was like, okay, what's going on?
But I did notice that for whatever reason, Hercules was very popular with the crowd in Atlantic City because they were popping for just about everything that he did. Now, the smoothest part of the match was the ending because it actually made Hercules look smart because when he did the bridge to get the victory off of a back suplex, originally his shoulders were on the mat alongside King Haku's, but at the very last second, he popped his shoulder up so he wouldn't get pinned too. And the commentary did a very good job of explaining that, because it did look legitimately like both combatant shoulders were on the mat, but they did a very nice job of explaining and capturing via replay that Hercules had popped his shoulder. Other than that, I can't really say anything about this. The review that I am using to go down the list of matches gives this a 1 3/4 rating, using the 5-star rating scale. Yeah. And I have to tell you, Elio, and obviously I want to get your take on this match as well, so I'll shut up in 1 second. But even that 3/4 rating seems a little bit generous. I would have given this a 1-star and stuck with that.
Wait, what was it? What's the rating that it was giving?
1 3/4 star.
One and three quarters. And no, I would go lower than that, because this wasn't a good match. Not a good way to start the show.
No, not at all. You know, especially, I'm not saying I think a championship match should have started off the card, but right. I think I would have considered doing it.
First of all, we of course we started the show with Rock and Robin doing her rendition of
Oh my God
the national anthem. That was pain. It was painful.
Dude, I was trying to block that out of my head. I was gonna spare the listeners.
Yeah, that's all I'm gonna say. I don't want to talk about it anymore. That's it. I'm just saying that's the way they kicked off Joe, and then we kicked into this match.
Wait a second, right? So they had some pretty cool, musical acts involved in this thing, and yeah. Of all people, they had Rockin' Robin sing the national anthem. Okay. Now, listen here, folks. Now look.
I agree with Jesse Ventura. Don't quit your day job.
Well, I think he was being kind. I was expecting something else. But I always enjoyed Jesse Ventura. I think he's incredible at what he did with WWF at the time. But this is atrocious, okay?
Yeah.
Now, I have seen some pretty atrocious renditions of the song. Yeah. And number one, it's insulting to do it poorly, but I never thought that somebody would give Roseanne Barr a competition for the worst rendition. But Rockin' Robin does the same thing, because at least Roseanne Barr was trying to be funny, which was her shtick.
Mm-hmm.
Rockin' Robin wasn't trying to be funny. She was just that atrocious.
Yep.
So I would like to know who cleared her of all people to be the one to sing the national anthem to start the show.
I'm curious, because I was trying to figure that out myself, like how they chose her.
Because, oh my God, it was brutal. I mean, I could do a better job, and I've never been a singer in my life.
Right.
Oh my God, it was terrible. Thank you for making me relive that. Not really.
Thank you. Okay, so back to this match. I really have nothing much more to add. It was a good opening match. If you're trying to get the people like excited about the show, this wasn't the match to do it. Because for me, it felt slow moving at times. And like we were just saying, that bear hug spots seemed like it was going on forever.
Absolutely.
So yeah,
So,
for me, not a good match. I would give it a 1 star.
okay, so this is where we're gonna start playing the game, because
Oh, okay.
you're gonna see a theme here, folks. Now,
All right.
before we start the game officially, let me do a count as to how many matches were on this card. Give me
Now, Ben,
one.
now, Ben, remember, we come from two different eras. I saw this when it aired live.
Well, I feel bad for you. Okay, so we have one, two, three, four,
14.
five.
Ben, we have 14.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, so I didn't have to. Why didn't you just say that before I started
Because
counting?
I had to scroll down. I was just scrolling down. It was like 14. Because I didn't even know how many there were in total.
Okay, very good. Well, Elias spared you at least the vast majority of my count. Very, very good. So we're gonna play a game, folks. How many of these 14 matches were not necessary on this card? Now, Elio,
Okay, sure.
I would claim that Hercules and King Haku was not necessary for the survival and betterment of this card. Do you agree?
No, I would have to agree with that, yes.
So one match out of 14 taken off.
All
And
right.
you'll understand my point for doing this at the end of the review, but just stick with me, okay?
Okay.
Well, the next match we had was the Rockers versus the Twin Towers. And this match was notable for being Shawn Michaels' first WrestleMania,
Yeah.
along with Marty Jannetty's and the Big Boss Man. And of course, Shawn Michaels and the Big Boss Man went on to become absolute legends in the business. For those of you that are unfamiliar with the Big Boss Man's larger contributions, I invite you to go back and do research on him, because even with how successful he was, I still maintain that he was very underrated for his time. Like if he was a wrestler in today's era, I think he would have been an even bigger deal.
And even before WWF, when he was in the UWF alongside Jim Cornette as Big Bubba Rogers.
Exactly. So he has a lot of history going back a long way. So if you're unfamiliar with the Big Boss Man, or if you had just seen him as Mr. McMahon's stooge in the Attitude Era, I invite you to go back and take a closer look at his career, because it was quite impressive. So, one of the things that really surprised me, was the outcome. I can understand on one hand why the Twin Towers would win, because they were arguably the second biggest deal going into the show, behind the dissolvement of the Mega Powers, based on how they were produced in the Royal Rumble, as one example. But honestly, I would make a bigger argument for the fact that the Rockers should have won this match, because one of the big complaints that I have is it was very obvious that both Michaels and Jannetty were wrestling down to the capabilities of Akeem, of course, Akeem being the former one-man gang. And to me, Akeem was the only person in this match who didn't have an impressive showing. And unfortunately,
Was that not a brutal gimmick character change that
oh my God.
they gave him? That was terrible. Like,
It
I did
was
not like it at all.
the one man gang was cool, you know. He was
Yeah.
one of, but the Akeem gimmick, no, make it stop.
Right.
Absolutely not. But luckily for me, knowing the historical significance for three out of the four combatants, I was able to appreciate this match a little bit more than maybe I should have. But having said that, it still wasn't the best match. But at the very least, they did do a good job illustrating the difference in style between the two teams and really highlighting the Rockers through that. Elio, what did you think of this match?
So for this one, so we're still playing that game, necessary, unnecessary.
Yes.
I'm gonna go with necessary. I mean, this was the Rockers' first WrestleMania. It wasn't their greatest. Was it their best match? No, but I mean, it was okay. I'll just say it was okay, and it was mainly Bossman and the Rockers and two different styles. Because Akeem didn't, I didn't like Akeem at all in this match.
No, I didn't. So remind me, because I just didn't hear you. So are you calling this match necessary or not
Yeah,
necessary?
no necessary. This one's necessary because being the Rockers' first WrestleMania.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you. So that's one in the proverbial win column for WrestleMania 5. So next up we have Brutus Beefcake versus Ted DiBiase. I
I'm
just
sorry, I'm sorry. This match was just stupid.
thank you. Thank you so much.
That, let me tell you right now, I'm going to save you the trouble of asking me. Unnecessary, 100% unnecessary. This
Well,
was garbage.
I absolutely agree with you because
And
outside.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So at the end, they're both outside of the ring. How is the end result on draw when they're both counted out of the ring? Is it a double count out? Where's the
Well,
draw?
it should have been just a double count out. Why they
Well,
called it a draw,
yeah,
I'm
where's the
like,
draw? What?
go back and check the rule book, bitch. I mean, I'm pretty sure Donald Trump knows the wrestling rule book better than whoever made this call. And
This is so stupid.
I bring up Donald Trump in this situation because one of the most entertaining aspects of the match was when Ted DiBiase went to shake his hand before the match.
Yeah.
And of course, Virgil joined him in paying homage to the Donald. But outside of calling it absolutely unnecessary and the ending quite stupid, yes, I would have to agree with Elio that this falls in the unnecessary category. So that's two out of three that fall under the unnecessary banner for WrestleMania 5. So we're not off to a very good start here.
No, you're making me rewatch this with new eyes because, like, when I saw this live, I was like, okay, this will be fun. Like, it could be a good WrestleMania. Now I'm watching it back, I'm like, what the
Let me help you, Elio, because
hell? Thank you. Help.
this is not a good show, and I will be back with further analysis and further mental assistance for Elio when we get back from the break. We'll be right back.
All right, and we are back, and Ben, we are just finishing up Brutus Beefcake and Ted DiBiase match, right?
Yeah.
You know what? I gotta say, Brutus Beefcake's hair was making me angry.
Yes. Well,
What the hell? Like, he
Brutus
was too.
Beefcake's entire gimmick makes me angry.
The man literally was literally carrying hedge clippers to the ring. If your gimmick is a barber, why are you carrying hedge clippers?
Yeah, that I was asking myself the same question.
But okay, so let's move on to the next match.
Well, hold on. unnecessary or necessary?
No, we already did that. I said unnecessary, remember?
Yeah, yes. Well, no, I don't recall, but okay.
No, because I said not necessary 100%.
Okay, very good.
Because I was telling you this match was stupid.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. Okay, so
there you go. I was like, wait a minute, I just told you. I just gave you my answer in the last segment.
Yeah, well, sorry. next up, we have the Bushwhackers versus the Fabulous Rougeos. Shall we say it together on three?
One, two, three.
Not necessary.
Necessary. Not necessary at all. I mean, okay, let's see. Well, wait. Huh. This was not a good match. I mean, this was, it was the first WrestleMania for the Bushwhackers. But still, it wasn't a good one. So this match didn't have to be there because there was no chemistry between these two teams. There was no like actual program that I can recall between these two teams.
Well, I was gonna ask you that. You're better at remembering, you know, programs and feuds than I am.
No, I don't recall. I don't recall any feud between these two teams. You know what? I'm gonna look this up. But okay, quick story. You know how the Bushwhackers used to look the fans' heads? Do you know the story behind that?
No.
So Bushwhacker Luke.
Oh, real quick, can you turn off your alarm? It's annoying me.
Turn off. I'll be right back. So do you remember remember when the Bushwhackers used to lick their fans' heads, right?
Well, yeah.
So
but I don't know the story behind it though.
Okay, so sorry. Okay, so Luke used to lick the fans' heads, but he used to lick the back of his hand, okay? To make it look like he was doing that, alright?
Yeah.
Bushwhacker Butch actually used to lick people's heads. Bushwhacker Luke told us that himself when we had him on as a guest. He like that Bush actually used to lick the fans' heads.
So was that back when you had the podcast with Man on a Mission, or was that the other one?
That was that one. That was that with Men on a Mission. But it was the other show, the Pipe Bomb radio one.
Oh, okay.
Though we have had him on WPOV quarantine.
That, as well. I mean, but that's disgusting.
So okay, yeah. So while you're going through your thoughts on the match, I mean, I'm just gonna look up if there was ever a program between these two.
I mean, you know, I matches like this, I have to remind myself, okay, it's a different time, different approach, and so on and so forth. That being said, Elio, I cannot find one redeeming quality in this match. I can't.
Neither can I, and you know what? Actually, this was one of the matches on the 50 Worst WWE Matches Ever tournament.
Well, yes, and you see now, for very good reason, because no. Not necessary.
Right. All right, so moving on to the next match.
The Blue Blazer versus Mr. Perfect. Can I ask you a question?
Sir.
please.
Yes, sir.
What was the point of the Blue Blazer gimmick?
I'm gonna just go with this, that he was supposed to be like a superhero. That was pretty much his character, the Blue Blazer. He was a superhero.
Oh my god, it was atrocious. Just let Owen Hart be Owen Hart, god damn it. It's right? Not that difficult.
No, it's not. But you know what? They should have kept him with this entrance, like running to the ring. Never mind all this nonsense with like dropping him from the rafters or whatever with the stupid ripcord.
You mean killing him? I mean, I don't mean to make a joke out of it, but that.
No, but like they did that other times. So it was just stupid. You just let the man do his entrance like he did at WrestleMania 5. That's it. Just running down to the ring like a superhero.
Exactly. Well, I guess they didn't want him doing that too much more because, you know, Ultimate Warrior was doing the same thing, and you know,
yeah,
I don't know. That would be my best guess.
You know what, for this one, I'm gonna say necessary because it was Owen Hart's first WrestleMania, and I thought this match was fine. And plus, I love Mr. Perfect too.
Well, absolutely, and for that reason and all the other reasons that you mentioned. Even though it was 5 minutes 38 seconds, it was really fun.
Yeah.
And I would say necessary. Now,
and remember at this time, that's a normal time of these matches. They're not like today where they're like 25-30 minutes.
Excuse me.
Whoa, what the fuck? What the? What was that? The fuck? Okay. All right. I'm not sure what happened. I thought I heard a bird flying through my room. What's going on?
Apparently, Coco Beware was making an appearance on the podcast. My bad.
He wants to sing power. He wants to sing Power Driver.
God, can we avoid them at all costs? Please. But yeah, this match was fun, and you know, showcasing two young talents, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And with 5 minutes and 38 seconds, it really didn't bother me. Now, what does bother me, with all due respect to the two combatants, you know, with this rating on this match, keep in mind, Elio, it's on a 5-star scale. This 5-minute match got 3 and 1/4 star. Kiss my overly white ass.
Oh, that's awfully descriptive, sir. What the fuck? You're lucky the president didn't hear you. You would have been like, Ben, what the hell? What the fuck is wrong with him? He would have yelled at me. Elliot, what is wrong with your co-host?
Yes. You would have been like that guy in the urinal. While you remember that part in Private Parts when the head of the radio station is in the bathroom taking a piss, and Howard Stern and his co-hosts are going, blank a diddle do, blank a diddle do.
Oh my goodness. So throughout, I mean, I would have gone higher than that, man. This was a fun match. I don't know what they're watching, but I enjoyed it.
Well, still 3 and 1/4 star is a little bit much.
So wait, hold on. So unnecessary, necessary, unnecessary. So we're 3 and 2.
For unnecessary versus necessary, right?
Yes, we're 3 and 2.
Okay, well, we're about to be 2 and 4 in favor of unnecessary because the powers of pain with Mr. Fuji versus Demolition. Now, let me explain something to you because apparently those that book 80s wrestling need a crash course.
Hold on, before we do, I want to get a side note because prior to this match, they had the Run DMC's WrestleMania rap. Ben, could you hear anything?
No.
Neither could I. So I was like, what was the point?
And meanwhile, you fuck up Run DMC, but yet the audio was working fine for Rock and Robin and the national anthem. Go figure. Right?
Okay, so it wasn't just me, because even when I was watching this live, I couldn't hear a word when Run DMC was doing that rap. I was like, this is terrible.
Okay, in all fairness, had this been talking about this tag team title match with Demolition and Powers of Pain now, had this been just Demolition versus the Powers of Pain without the 3-on-2 handicap thing with Mr. Fuji involved, this would have absolutely probably been one of my favorite matches of the night because how could you go wrong with Demolition? Well, right. they found a way because, and all due respect to Mr. Fuji, what the fuck was he doing in the ring?
Yeah, this was, he was like far past his prime there because, it was years, like, in fact, I forget the last time he was in the ring prior to this. I want to say it was like 86 or around the early 80s, I'm going to say. He was more active. This was winding down.
So the other reason why I say that, folks, this is not the only, and I'll put this in quotes, because the next part wasn't really a match, but it still kind of counts for what I'm about to say. This wasn't the only match, in air quotes, involving a manager, because we also had Bobby Heenan involved in a match with the Red Rooster, which we'll get into, unfortunately, a little bit later on.
So again, this was Powers of Pain versus WrestleMania.
Yes, so a lot of important acts getting their first shine on the biggest pay-per-view, which I really appreciate that from a historical perspective on this card, because one of the things that I was noticing, because when I do the prep for shows like this, I look at numerous reviews, not just one, to get a good feel for, you know, where this landed in critics' minds and where it stands in comparison with the other WrestleManias and so on and so forth. And I will say, in my opinion, this one has more historical significance for the quality of talent debuting on an international stage such as WrestleMania than probably any of the other early WrestleManias. If you wanna go down that route. So I really didn't like the 3-on-2 aspect of it because I felt like Mr. Fuji's involvement was just kind of unnecessary.
It was weird. I mean, I know you want your revenge and demolition or whatever, but putting yourself in the match is not really the way. You didn't have to be there. You could still get your, you could still like get back at them in managerial role.
Exactly, and there was one. point in the match that I want to point out in particular. Because at one point, Mr. Fuji goes to the top rope, and I'm like, what the hell is he doing? I literally rewound it to make sure I wasn't seeing things. So I was tired at the point, I wanted to make sure I wasn't hallucinating. Because Fuji goes to the top rope. I don't know what he was going for, but he landed right on his asshole.
Oh, I'm with the plug.
I thought it was going to be a repeat of Nia Jax, my hole.
That was bad. That was terrible when I saw that. Oh, I'm like, what?
And Nia Jax wonders why wrestling fans don't like her. That's why, Nia! You fucking suck. But nonetheless, would you grade this as unnecessary or necessary?
This one unnecessary. I mean, it was necessary. Like, I'm gonna put it in both necessary and unnecessary. Necessary, like it was Power Spain, the first WrestleMania, but unnecessary because it didn't need to be a handicap match. You want to have the tag team titles online, it should be a tag team match, not a handicap
match. Yes, and I think that this was the first, for me at least, I believe that this is the first handicap match I've seen where a title's been on the line.
Yeah, this was the first one that I've seen at a WrestleMania, yes.
So the next up, and I'm willing to bet you that I know what you're gonna vote this one as. Dino Bravo versus, wait for it, folks. Wait for it. Not just Ronnie Garvin. No. This is rugged Ronnie Garvin. Yeah, what the rugged fuck is that?
Okay. I'm glad you asked. So, rugged Ronnie Garvin, because, like, he had that, like, rugged, tough guy character going. So, why they call him rugged Ronnie Garvin? It was somewhat similar to his, when he was in NWA, except that in NWA, he was called, like, Hands of Stone Ronnie Garvin.
What?
But, yeah, that's what his name was, Hands of Stone Ronnie Garvin.
Okay.
No, I take rugged Ronnie Garvin over that. But they're still both terrible names, but his character was like a rugged tough guy.
Well, the best thing that this match had going for it was that it was a short match.
At 3 minutes.
This was unnecessary to the T.
Yeah. So unnecessary, even if it was Ronnie Garvin's first WrestleMania.
Because okay, and
we had two French Canadians in the ring. What's going on?
Yeah, it's your country, man, and they fucked it up. And another pet peeve of mine throughout this match. Okay. They keep calling, you know. I think this is the second time I've heard them do it. They keep calling Dino Bravo's finisher a side suplex. I'm like,
is that where he has? Hold on. Is that where he has his opponent like under his arm, like a side slam, like he's gonna drop him on
yes.
side slam? It's not a side suplex. What's going on? What?
It's a side slam. I'm like, if I have to hear you call it a side suplex one more time. Ladies and gentlemen, you know this by now, but just for shits and giggles, okay? I've been watching wrestling for over 30 years. Elio has...
I'm watching for 40 years.
Okay. Have we ever heard it... heard of any suplex referred to as a side suplex?
No.
No. Why would you do it here? God damn.
Exactly.
Do you not know the difference between a suplex and a slam?
Now, who called it that? Was it Gorilla or was it Jesse Ventura?
I think it was Gorilla, if I'm not mistaken.
Gorilla, I'm sorry. You know, I love you, but I'm disappointed. Come on, you should know better.
Okay, and finally, for the sweet love of the wrestling gods, we get a necessary match that had story. I thought I hit the lottery. The Brainbusters versus Strikeforce. Necessary. The Brainbusters versus Strikeforce. I'll tell you, this is like the needle in the haystack. This was the match I was waiting for because the rest of this card was leaving a lot to be desired outside of some of the positive stuff we've already talked about.
Sorry, okay? Ben. How many necessaries and necessaries are we up to right now?
So it is two necessaries and
four. Okay, so now we're in 4 and 3 because I call this one necessary. And I'll give you the story behind this when you're done.
Absolutely. And before we went to break because of technical difficulties, I was saying finally a match with story. The driving story with this match was the fact that Rick Martel left Tito Santana high and dry by jumping off the apron and going back to the locker room to leave him in a two-on-one situation with Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard. I got news for you. I don't care if you're Andre the Giant. I don't think you're going to fare too well in a two-on-one situation with Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard.
Right.
Yeah. Now, whether they're in a tag team by themselves or whether they are riding with the Four Horsemen, these two men are absolute legends and icons. I would have loved to have seen more of the Brainbusters in WWE, to be honest with you. I don't think they had a very long run in WWE, but I can't understand why.
You know what? I'm going to look that up, Ben. I'm going to look that up while you continue. Go on.
But, this match was easily the best match to this point. We actually have moves that I can go over because it went longer than 5 minutes with a total time of 9 minutes and 13 seconds. First and foremost, this was not the first move, obviously, but the first commentary that I have to make is I love Arn Anderson's spine buster.
So, Ben, sorry, I have the reason here.
Okay,
they were in WWF from 1980-89, okay? So, Arn Anderson left in December of 89 and went back to WCW. Blanchard was slated to return as well, because WF was accused him of testing positive for cocaine. So WCW, under the ownership of Ted Turner, they reformed the Four Horsemen without him.
That was a dirty move. So did he actually test positive for cocaine, or did they just accuse him?
That's just like accusation. Like, we don't know for sure. It doesn't say anything. It just says WBF accused him.
Okay.
I mean, they don't know for sure. So
this is where the match got very interesting, getting back into the matchup. So, Arn Anderson saves Hold on, let me just make sure I got this right. So, Santana has a backslide on Blanchard for a two count. Arn breaks that up. Then he also has to break up an inside cradle. Santana tagged in Martel, which the ref didn't see. And then he accidentally got hit with a flying forearm to send Martel out of the ring. Of course, this is what pissed Martel off. And then after Blanchard hit a drop kick, we eventually got to a point where I'm sorry, I'm just
And
trying to
Arn
get off.
Anderson.
Yeah, we eventually got to the point where Tito Santana went to tag in Martel, and he
Okay.
jumps off the apron and walks off. Now, this is not the last we're going to hear of Martel, because we have commentary from him in the back with Gene Okerlund, which was hilarious, so I have to highlight it in just a second. But after Martel walked off, Tito was not having a very good evening, because he was left in a two-on-one situation with Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard. I say that again. I know I said that before, but I say that again because, just to re-emphasize, these two are two of the best technical wrestlers of their time, and you're not gonna have a very good fucking night in a two-on-one situation. I
Okay,
don't care.
so no, sorry. I was on Arn Anderson's page, I'm on Tully Blanchard's page now, and I have like even more detailed.
Okay, go ahead.
So, okay, it says Blanchard and Anderson were planning a return to the NWA. As a result, the WWF pushed a breakup angle between Bobby Heenan and the Brainbusters on the November 25th, 1989 Saturday Night's Main Event 24, which was taped October 31st of 1989. Around that time, Blanchard failed the drug test, testing positive for cocaine and causing his premature departure from WWF and the withdrawal by the NWA of their offer of employment.
Okay.
So that was
Well,
it. Then
Mr.
says
Blanchard.
Bobby Heenan himself replaced Blanchard as part of the Heenan family team at Survivor Series 5 days later.
Oh. Well, Mr. Blanchard fucked up in the late 89, didn't he?
Right.
No, obviously I'm just being an asshole for the sake of being an asshole.
That was pretty bad. Like, and the interview, withdrew their offer. I don't know.
But yeah, clearly Tully Blanchard was going through some difficulties in 1989.
Right.
Speaking of difficulties, that spike pile driver on Tito Santana to end the match was absolutely brutal.
Dang, I love the Brainbusters. They were like one of my favorite teams at this time.
I don't know if you quite know the extent of this, but Arn Anderson has always been a favorite of mine.
Remember,
Just
he'd slap his grandma for 50 cents.
yes,
I love how you
but
always throw that into his promos.
and when he get when he was cutting that promo on Cody Rhodes and AEW, he was like, when you get pulled over, you're like, please don't hurt me, take the car. And Arn Anderson was like, I pull out the Glock and put one between your eyes. And that really is a mentality difference. Unfortunately, I'm not sure that would swing today. I think Arn Anderson would still be going to jail. Not that I necessarily would support him going to jail in that instance.
Right.
But yeah, if you haven't seen an Arn Anderson spine buster and you call yourself a wrestling fan, I don't know what the fuck you're doing.
Right.
I really don't. But so that would definitely be graded as a necessary match for me.
Okay, so we are, where are we, are we tied now? 4-4?
I think
let me check.
I think we still might be one up on the unnecessary category, but that's just my thought.
Actually, no, we're I think we're 5-3. I was just counting.
Okay. Okay, so look, if we were, I always say this, but I have to say this in this particular scenario. I was so disappointed with this, because I have always loved Piper's Pit, going back to the
Hold on. You're going to talk about Rick Martel's commentary backstage.
Okay. Yes. So I was...
You can't deny me of my commentary. I have to explain myself why I did what I did to Tito Santana.
Yeah,
I'm a model.
It was...
Go ahead.
This was Jesus, how am I supposed to follow that shit? But it was so hilarious. Gene Okerlund got so indignant and started pointing his finger into the chest of Rick Martel. And I'm like, how dare you? How dare you? You know, how could you possibly do this to Tito? And so on and so forth. And,
I thought Gene himself was gonna fight Rick Martel right there.
Yes, at which point I would have started laughing my ass off. I would have paid the price of the pay per view just to see that. But so this is what he said, that he got tired of carrying Tito. I think it was the other way around, Rick. But that's just my thought process. So this is what prefaced Rick Martel turning into the model. Roddle is not a word. The model, Rick Martel, and turning him heel. So that's where that came from.
So now, I'm gonna give my I gave this one as was necessary, but I'm gonna say this. I like this because. Up to now, Rick Martel, if you didn't follow him before in WWF, he was in the AEW, he was the AEW world champion, and that was his singles run. When they brought him to the WWF, they put him in with the Can-Am connection, and he's always been in tag team, so this was a good thing, turning him heel and having him go on his solo run.
Yeah, I always like that, and I always thought Rick Martel was underrated. So next up, and I hate to do this. I know it's blasphemy because we're both lovers of Rowdy Roddy Piper, but for the first and hopefully only time in my podcasting career, I have to call something involving Roddy Piper a low point, and that fucking hurts my soul. I want you to understand, I take this very seriously. The fact that I have to call Rowdy Roddy Piper a low point at WrestleMania 5, holy shit.
Well, Ben, I'm sorry, but I have to say, as a fan of Rowdy Roddy Piper, I mean, I have to agree, because this was not a good segment. I didn't enjoy this at all.
No, this is
I didn't like this.
The one and only Piper's Pit that I've seen that I hated every second of.
And I was excited like, because I didn't know Roddy Piper was gonna be there. Like when Howard Finkel announced Roddy Piper, I jumped up off of my couch. I was like, what?
Yes, and then of course, we're all disappointed because instead of Rowdy Roddy Piper, we get Bruce, Brother Love, we hate you, Pritchard.
You know what? This guy needs to be fired. Why is he still there? Get rid of him. please.
I don't know. But we have gotten rid of two-thirds of the three-headed monster with Kevin Dunn and Vince McMahon. So that is a step in the right direction. And I personally think that that is a, those two being gone is a massive positive for WWE.
But I gotta say, go on. I'll give mine after.
This segment, however, was not a massive positive. The only thing that I liked about this segment was when Roddy Piper kicked Brother Love. We hate you. I'm sorry. That's just me talking to Bruce Pritchard out of the ring. That was the best part. But then why this segment went 20 minutes, I'll never be able to figure out. Okay? Now, you're talking to a guy who, as I said earlier, has been watching wrestling for 30 years. LAO has been doing it for 40. And we have seen some brutal in-ring talking segments that never should have existed. This is one of them, because this is 20 minutes of my life I can't get back.
Not ready.
Before this, I was in the camp where I would have said, you know, Roddy Piper can make good television with anyone. Well, apparently, Morton Downey Jr. is the exception to that rule, because this shit stuck Donkey Kong-sized dick.
Mr. Pierce, I ask you, please, don't blow no more smoke in my face.
Actually, you know what? I'm glad that you brought up that line, because I looked it up. And apparently that was something that Morton Downey Jr. was known for. Apparently he was a shock jock of sorts in the 80s.
Yeah, he had his own television show, the Morton Downey Jr. show.
And
you know what? I'm gonna pull it up here right now in front of me while you're talking.
But folks, this is not a good segment. It's just there's nothing redeeming about this segment.
So here it is, Ben. So he was an American television talk show host and actor who pioneered the trash TV format in the late 1980s on this program, The Morton Downey Jr. Show.
And apparently, I don't mean to laugh, but apparently he was a big pro smoking supporter. And then he got and I'm not laughing at this. This is not me being a dick. Apparently he got cancer where he had to have one of his lungs removed. And after that, he was very anti-smoking. Gee, I wonder why. But yeah, he actually died at 68 because of his smoking. It's sad because a lot of that was his gimmick, so to speak, to put it in wrestling terms.
And he also released one album in 1989 called Zip It, which is an album of songs based on his talk show.
Oh, Julie, I'm glad I missed that one.
Well, it's on YouTube. You can go listen to it.
I would rather not. I would rather eat dog shit.
Okay. Ew. I'd rather do neither.
Neither will I. But speaking of low points, the low points continued, and this one I was really surprised by. Especially with Jake Roberts' involvement. Andre the Giant versus Jake Roberts. This was very bad. Now, I'm not going to be an asshole here, because Andre the Giant's physical deterioration was very obvious. So I don't really want to be an asshole other than calling this a low point and calling this not necessary. Because if I'm WWE, I'm always trying to paint Andre the Giant, who you could argue is like the original star of pro wrestling. And I think that's a good argument. You know, you always want to put him in a positive light, and this was the last furthest thing from it. It was actually quite painful for me to see this.
Yeah.
So I would call that unnecessary.
And I would agree. I would call this one unnecessary. And of course, we had special referee, the winner of the 1989 Royal Rumble, Big John Studd.
Yes, but you know what was even more unnecessary about this, folks? Guess how long this match went?
How long?
10 minutes. 10 minutes. Holy
wow.
God. Can we not? I really wish we didn't have to do that. And speaking of another thing that this show had that I wish they didn't, was they were they had Sean Mooney interviewing fans about the matches.
Yeah, why? What? I didn't get that.
Periodically throughout the evening, and it was so bad.
By the way, let me tell you something. Like, okay, going back to that Roddy Piper segment. You know why you're lucky?
What is that?
You get to fast forward the terrible segments like that. I was watching this live. I couldn't, there was no fast forward button.
Well, I will defend myself here because technologically you're right. But because of the fact that I was doing prep for the podcast.
No, I'm saying that's the thing. I was like, you get these fans. I'm not talking about you because you were doing this for the podcast. Like fans today, they get to fast forward this stuff. I had to watch it live. There was a fast forward button.
I feel very bad for you and the rest of your 80s compatriots because holy crap. Now this one I'll be very interested to get your take on. Here's the next match, folks. The Hart Foundation versus Honky Tonk Man and Greg Valentine.
Rhythm and Blues.
Yes, but did you notice, and I was a little bit surprised by this, they didn't refer to them as Rhythm and Blues, so clearly they weren't that tag team yet.
No, not yet. This is the first time. This is their first time teaming up on a pay-per-view. And then they become known as Rhythm and Blues after this.
Okay, very good. But yeah, I would agree this match is necessary. I'm a huge fan of the Hart Foundation, so I thought that this was very, very good.
Yep, and I believe I was gonna say something like no wait the this is not the these guys have all been on WrestleMania, so yeah, but it. It was fine. It was a good match. I'd say necessary for this one. Because I'm a fan of this one. And I like the Honky Tonk Man.
Yes. But and the only part that I really didn't like was at the very end when Brett hit Honky with a megaphone for the pin. Because Bret Hart is so good that he doesn't need to do that.
Right.
Plus, I wasn't aware that the Hart Foundation I don't think they were supposed to be, but the way that the match ended, they were being presented as heels at that point.
And just because heels actually use the megaphone on their opponents doesn't mean the Hart Foundation have to. I'm just
exactly.
saying. I mean, they can, but they shouldn't have to.
So next up, and from this point on, the evening got very, very interesting. It took a while, but once we got to the Intercontinental title match between Ultimate Warrior and Rick Rude, the rest of this evening was very interesting. Now, I'll preface this by saying the only match of the Ultimate Warriors that ever impressed me was the following year at WrestleMania 6 in Toronto.
Okay.
That's the only match that I've seen of Ultimate Warriors where I'm like, okay.
I should have been there, damn it. That's another story.
Well, we already know your one WrestleMania story in Toronto where you were pulling out of the building before The Rock and Hogan.
No, not before The Rock and Hogan.
Oh, I thought you missed that one too.
No, my brother wouldn't miss that one.
Oh, okay. Well, then Joe does have some redeemable qualities, or is that Paul?
No, it's Joe.
Okay, I got it right. Yay! Very good. Very good. Okay. So I'm getting to know your family tree here. Very good. But yeah, this I really enjoyed this match. Outside of a couple sloppy spots from the Warrior, including a backbreaker, and then Rude fell out of his arms as they went crashing into the ropes by the turnbuckle at one point. That looked like it was painful. But this was a much better match than I would have anticipated. But then again, you did have Rick Rude on the other side. So it couldn't be that bad. But the real big selling point of this match outside of the Intercontinental Championship was Rick Rude selling. He did a fantastic job throughout this entire match.
And you know what? I'm glad Warrior lost the belt because I like Rick Rude as Intercontinental Champion.
Yeah, I did too. And I also enjoyed seeing Warrior give Bobby Heenan a gorilla press slam before his match with the Iron Rooster. So,
Wait, what? Did you call the Iron Rooster?
Or,
the Red Rooster.
Yes, funny story.
We just renamed Terry Taylor the Iron Rooster.
There's actually a restaurant called the Iron Rooster like 20 minutes away from my house.
That's funny. So
that's where that came from. But yeah, so this would be a high point necessary to watch on one of the few on this card that I would recommend watching.
Alright, so we are 5-3.
No, I think we're 4-5.
Sorry.
No.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Again, I'm gonna double check. Go on.
We're about to be 4-6 on the side of on the winning side of not necessary, because Bad News Brown versus Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Holy crap.
Awful. Let me tell you something. Anytime Bad News Brown's been in the ring, it's always been some random opponent. Have you noticed?
Yes. I went back. Yes, I have noticed. Thank you for asking. But no, this is awful. The best thing I can say about it was short. And then we had Red Rooster versus Bobby Heenan. I think there was only one move because it was only 29 seconds.
Keep Sorry, in mind, Ben, we're 6-5 with the recruit match.
Okay. But Red Rooster versus Bobby Heenan gets a low point, unnecessary, because it was 29 seconds long. Heenan charged in the corner after getting hit by some fist. And then Rooster moved. He eats the middle turnbuckle, talking about Bobby Heenan. And then Rooster got the cover for the pinfall. And I'm like, why is this necessary? Now we're just doing bullshit.
So there we go. We are 6 and 7 for unnecessary.
Okay. So, and then obviously we have, I can get this in before.
Yep.
Okay. Then we have the main event, which was the massive selling point of the pay-per-view. The Mega Powers did indeed explode, ladies and gentlemen.
So before you go on, did you that video that I sent you? Did you notice, see how it tied everything all up?
Yes, it did so tremendously. I was actually very grateful for that. Thank you for pointing that out to me.
And I had a quick story about the main event, which took place on Friday, February 3rd. So the second main event took place from the Milwaukee Bradley Center. And on this night, I don't know what happened, but in my house, if one of us did something wrong or whatever, everyone got sent to their rooms, okay? And so on this particular night, I don't know, I forgot what my brothers did, but my dad got mad. He sent them to their room. So I had to go to my room as well. And I almost missed the main event. So I had to wait till everyone was all quiet upstairs watching their TV. And then I slowly snuck from my room to the computer room. I turned off the lights. I turned the screen black. And then I turned the TV on with the sound all the way down. And I was watching the main event. Eventually I got caught. Eventually, I got caught, but my dad's like, it's okay, go ahead.
Well, at least he was cool about it. Shout out to Mr. Canella for that one.
So I kind of got mad at my brothers. I'm like, damn it, if I miss the main event, I'm going to be mad.
How much younger are they than you, just out of curiosity?
They are 7. No, sorry, they're 6. They're 6 years younger. Cause I'm 15. They're 44.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Yeah.
For some reason, I didn't think the age gap was that steep, but very good.
Yep.
So before either Hogan or Savage come up, Miss Elizabeth comes out surrounded by security, just absolutely mobbed, and thank God she was, or else she would have gotten hurt.
Yeah,
I'm willing to bet you. And then we have the walkouts. Of course, Macho Man gets the bigger one because he's the champion. Not for long, asshole. No. <I'm kidding>. But so it started out really, really slow. They were just kind of feeling each other out. Both got sent to the outside a number of times. I think Elizabeth immediately checked on Hogan, and then once Savage got knocked out, she went to check on him, but was told to stay away because Savage was being a dick. I don't know how anyone could be rude to that woman. Good God, she could hit me in the head with a hammer. I wouldn't give a fuck. So eventually Hogan gets revenge by ramming Savage into the turnbuckle a few times. We get a clothesline plus a series of elbows. And then shortly thereafter, Hogan got a cut right around his eye, right above his eye. At this point, I was surprised the match wouldn't stop because at the 80s, I thought they were still anti-blood. So I was expecting a little bit of a stoppage there, but apparently not.
In the 80s, they still did blood.
And I was was happy because it didn't interrupt the integrity of the match. I think a stoppage would have really messed them up at that point because they were really starting to get hot. Eventually, we get some classic Hogan offense. You know, we got the atomic drop. We got a missed elbow. We got a running knee into the back that leads to a roll-up with the tights. I think that was for Savage, but that was an excellent. That was probably my favorite sequence of the match, the most fluent segments of the match, I should say. And then fast-forwarding a little bit, this particular spot was actually scary because Hogan picks up Savage and just slams him all the way to the outside. That particular spot looked absolutely grotesque. And then eventually Savage uses the ropes back in the ring to clothesline Hogan's throat. I've never seen that move before. I thought that was pretty cool.
I tell you when he pulled the rope and Hogan fell backwards.
No.
He used the top rope as a clothesline.
Oh yeah. Actually,
yeah. Okay, yeah. They used to do that a lot there. Then
with the clothesline. I had never seen that spot. So
yeah. They used to do that.
And then, we get a little bit more of the offense with the flying elbow drop, and I was actually really surprised because I didn't know the ending prior to the show. So I was honestly floored when the flying elbow didn't end the match. But Hogan got hawked up. You know, you've all seen the Hulk up.
With the muscles. You see. There he goes again. There's Ben with his hot dog and grandstanding a glory hound. Go ahead.
I just, you know, for some reason that always weirds me out. And I know that's like a classic Hogan thing, but it just kind of like weirds me out.
It's weird. Let's even stop.
Like, if I was the opponent, that wouldn't scare me. I would start laughing, and then I'd go back to hitting him in the face. But eventually we got the big leg drop after the boot to the face, and Hogan got the pinfall in just under 18 minutes. That and that right there is the standout moment for you know, WrestleMania 5, obviously. That was the big selling point with the mega powers exploding. Mm-hmm. There was so much of this card that was just unnecessary. I think you could have safely taken like 6 or 7 matches off of this thing, and I think it would have really helped the card in terms of memorability, because then there would have been a lot less gaps between the 3 title matches, and I think if you do that, it makes it a much better show. But that's my overall take for WrestleMania 5.
And I agree, because looking at that back at it now, it's like, wow, a lot of this was not good. I mean, it was okay at that time, but watching it back today.
Yeah, not so much. So we'll be right back to do your official wrap up. Stay right there.
All right, we're back, and Ben, that's the end of WrestleMania 5, yes?
Yes, sir.
So, Ben, that does it for this week on next pay per view. We are going to New Jersey, East Rutherford, and the Meadowlands Arena for SummerSlam.
So, in other words, we're still in New Jersey. This week, we were in Atlantic City. And now
this week, we're going to East Rutherford next week.
Okay, very good. Giants territory.
And SummerSlam is, these early SummerSlams were some of my favorites. I used to wait for these videos to come out, Then I'd go up to the video store, rent them, and then watch them.
Yeah, let me actually look at the card while we're talking about it. But yeah, I'm really enjoying getting back into these Tuesday timeline shows. I think they're a lot of fun.
And let me tell you something. Randy Savage is not done with Hulk Hogan just yet.
Oh, somehow I didn't doubt that.
So Ben and I are still feuding, because I've recruited Ben's arch nemesis from his movie No Holds Barred to I've enlisted his help in my feud.
Oh, good lord! All right, let's see what this card looks like. We have the Heart Foundation versus the Brain Busters. Thank you. I appreciate that. We have the Honky Tonk Man versus Dusty Rhodes. Oh, joy. Joy is joy. We have Mr. Perfect versus the Red Rooster. Mr. Perfect deserves better. We have the Rockers and Tito Santana versus the Fabulous Rougeaus and Rick Martel. Okay, yay. Well, that's like a feud. There's like a two feuds mixed into one match. So the fuck what? Nobody cares.
So okay, the Rockers and Rougeaus. I'll tell you that story next week on the show.
Then we have the Intercontinental Championship on the line. A rematch from WrestleMania 5. We have Ravishing Rick Rude versus the Ultimate Warrior.
Steel Cage, right? Steel Cage?
Doesn't say that. That's
no,
it doesn't say
no,
that.
No, no, I think I'm wrong. It's not a Steel Cage. That was SummerSlam 90. Yeah, okay. No, it's not a Steel Cage. I'm wrong. But still, good match nonetheless.
And then the next match is the Twin Towers and Andre the Giant versus Demolition and King Duggan. Okay.
I'll tell you about that story as well.
Very random. And then we have...
It's not random. I'll tell you that story as well. The program there.
Hercules versus Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Okay, no one cares. That is random.
Yes, exactly. We have Ted DiBiase versus Superfly Jimmy Snuka.
Random.
Then we have Macho Man versus Zeus.
Sorry? What?
Macho Man versus the human wrecking machine Zeus.
No, what are you doing? No, Ben. It's a tag team match.
Oh.
It's a tag team match. Randy Savage and Zeus versus Hulk Hogan and Bruce Beefcake.
Okay. Yeah, that makes more sense. Okay.
I was like, wait, what? What are you reading there? I mean, did the website mistype it?
Maybe.
Okay. Yeah, because that's a tag team match. Because I created the poster for it.
Oh. Did you now? Oh. So you've already seen this. So I'm coming in behind the eight ball then. Okay.
What? SummerSlam 89? I already watched that. Yeah. This is another one I watched when it happened.
Very good. All right. So that's what we have on the agenda for next week. Don't forget, on Friday, we're coming back with Wrestling POV for our Royal Rumble post-show. Are we doing Saturday or Sunday for the regular show?
Whichever day you want, because I know you got your football as well.
Well, actually, the Super Bowl isn't for like until the week after next. So
okay,
I think
we go on Saturday then. Yep.
Okay. Very good.
Unless I get invited out to my neighbors for dinner, and then I will just switch it over to Sunday.
Okay, very good. Yeah, just like
I'm working on this ridiculous tournament for the show. Ben, some of these movie titles, you're gonna be like, what the fuck?
Exactly. I'm sure you're looking forward to it. You like to make me angry.
I'm still working on the 101 greatest matches. I started putting that together though. So I'm gonna
Okay, very
continue
good.
that before the weekend. So
Very
that
good.
is it for Tuesday Timeline. I'm Elliot. He's Ben. Ben, say goodnight to the fans.
Thanks for hanging out for another episode of Tuesday Timeline. We'll see you next Tuesday at the same time.
Roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.